This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Today we're talking with Clint Nagel. He's president of the Gallatin Wildlife Association. He's retired from the U.S. Geological Survey, Water Resources Division. He's lived in Bozeman since 2009 and knows a lot about what's going on about wildlife and wilderness. So, Clint, welcome. It's good to be talking with you once again. How are things up there?
Right now, they're cold and snowy.
Ah, well, that's what you expect in Montana at this time of year.
Yes.
So, Clint, Gallatin Wildlife Association has been monitoring a variety of wildlife and wilderness and forestry issues for a number of years now. Recently, there have been a number of legislative bills, I understand, in the Montana legislature that have to do with wolves and other issues, and that you've been following those bills. What's going on? What are the issues?
Well, this legislative session started in early January, so we're not too far into the 69th session of the Montana State Legislature. I understand it that they expect around 4,300 drafts of bills in this session. And if this session is like previous ones, perhaps a third or slightly more will be introduced.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's an ongoing process, and they do it all within about 3 or 4 months. And I have my own opinions about the process, but so I'll keep those to myself at the moment.
Do they deal with kinds of issues every year or every other year?
The legislature meets every other year.
Oh, okay.
And this is about the third year that I've been, or the third session, rather, that I've been following the procedures in the legislature as close as I have been. It seems like there's always... many of them will be affecting wildlife and wildlife habitat, either in a direct or indirect way. And as usual, it seems like most of them would be harmful rather than beneficial to wildlife.
Yeah.
We've had two major bills that have earned a lot of attention lately, and those are House Bills 176 and 222. Fortunately, House Bill 222 has been defeated in the House. And House Bill 176 will get, actually, its final vote today. I have not heard how that has gone. But both of these bills pertain to wolf, the population of wolves in the state. And they were both basically mandating the state to reduce the population of wolves by at least 50%.
Oh, my gosh.
And...
so is the
What's that?
Is the wolf population in Montana known at the present time?
Well, it's estimated that there's around 1,100 within the state, give or take 100. It's been fairly constant over the last several years, and that's been some of the consternation of those wolf opponents, those who are against. Wolves on the landscape, they're trying to reduce the population, and they're getting upset because they're not able to do so. At least they haven't been successful yet.
Where are the wolves located? Are they just north of Yellowstone, or are they up some around Glacier? Where are they?
They're pretty much in western Montana, from north to south, from Glacier to Yellowstone.
Over to the Bitterroot as well?
Yeah, there's, there's the whole idea, obviously, is to get wolves on the landscape, and they do move a lot, obviously, and there are certain areas that are more conducive to wolf populations than others, mostly due to those who have some type of land protection. Those will generally have a more of a wolf population than others, but they pretty much in the western third of the state, and going into Idaho and, of course, Wyoming.
I thought the gray wolf was on the endangered species list.
They are endangered in about 44 states, I believe. They're listed as threatened in Minnesota and actually in Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. They are under state control, so they are not listed in those three states.
So they were exempted from the ESL?
Yes.
What was the rationale for that?
I will say politics, primarily. There's political pressure by states, and prominently led by probably a lot of livestock producers, hunters, trappers, and just fear among the general society about the dangers of having wolf populations as high as they are. The one big explanation you always hear is that the wolves have depleted the elk population, which is not true, but you hear it anyway. And that resonates with those in political power, and so that's where we are.
So is it the hunters who are the principal lobbyists against wolves, or is it the ranchers, or who?
I would say it's generally a combination of hunters, ranchers, livestock producers, and you have trappers in there who, of course, are egging some of this on as well.
So what's the rationale for saying there are too many wolves in the state? There are only 1,100, and it's a huge state.
Yeah, well, no one, you know, it's hard to say what the right number of wolves in the state is, and we're not quite sure what that right number is. My viewpoint is that, you know, we just don't know. We're not actually sure how many wolves are in the state, and that's a source of contention among many environmental groups versus the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks and other opponents. Like I said before, the wolf population has been rather stable over the last several years, and that has made a lot of the opposition very upset. And that's one reason these two bills that I mentioned earlier are as extreme as they are.
So who are the principal perpetrators in the legislature of those bills? It's a guy up near Glacier, I think, who is one of the principal legislators, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're talking about Paul Fielder.
Columbia.
Yeah, he in the past he has been the source of a lot of anti-wolf legislation, and he's at it again. But he has some more friends this time that are also driving the train as well. You know, there's it is this feeling of anti-wolf is pretty prevalent in Montana politics. Of course, we have a governor that is. He has his positions, and he's made known what those are. It's not just against wolves, though. There's I hate to say it, but, you know, it has come to be known as a war on wildlife.
Yep.
And that's been going on now for the last three legislative sessions. This one is no different. So in the state legislature, you have they can run amok with all these bad bills, and in amongst some of those, you might find a good bill every now and then, but it usually gets defeated in the legislature. So
are there certain legislators who are really advocates for sustaining wolf populations?
Yeah, there are. Like I said, it's basically the same ones, but this legislative session, there's more than usual. There's some new players.
Well, I'm surprised that HB 222 failed. It was going to reduce the wolf population.
Well, that was kind of a little bit unique in a way that the guy that actually proposed that bill, I won't go into too much about him, but he was like, I think like 19 or 20. He's from the Kalispell area, and the knock against him was that he was too young and green to really know what he was submitting. He didn't understand the landscape, so to speak. And but that Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks actually came out against that bill. I'm not quite sure what the full rationale is. Part of the reasoning was they said that it took away too much power from the Fish and Wildlife Commission.
Oh,
but,
I see.
But if the truth be told, you could say that about a lot of these wildlife bills, not just the ones that pertain to wolves, but a lot of wildlife bills. They're, of course, mandated and trying to be legislated by politicians. That decision is not being left up to the Fish and Wildlife Commission where it should be.
Right. Yeah.
But it's made by politicians, and of course, if they pass, the governor signs it, and it goes into law. So once that happens, it becomes a moot point as far as public participation goes. Most of the public isn't even aware that a lot of this stuff is going on.
Right.
Because, you know, they're busy conducting their own lives from day to day, and a lot of people don't pay attention to what's going on in Helena. And so then they find out after the fact that these bills are passed, and a lot of people just seem to give it a shrug, and they go on from there. But so it actually takes... It takes a lot of time, really, to basically follow this, all these bad bills, and to sit on them and to track them, and to then try to mobilize against them. And a lot of times we're on the losing end because, in my opinion, and I'll say it's my opinion, the game is rigged.
So
I don't think Montana's probably the only state legislature that works this way, but it's my opinion of this one.
So House Resolution 471 also got defeated, but HB 176, which is similar, is being voted on right now in the legislature. Why? What makes it different that it's still alive?
I couldn't tell you. I mean, some of these bills for example, House Bill 222 and House Bill 176, they were basically had the hearing on the same day, but House Bill 222, they have several different reading sessions, and if it gets voted down in a session before the final one, then it fails. So 176 just happened to last longer, and there's a lot of it. The reason had to do with bills. The sponsor of the bill will go into discussions or deliberations with others to kind of maybe reduce the impact or to make it more favorable for passage, and so that takes time. And so some bills get defeated or passed earlier than others.
So do you expect 176 to get defeated as well?
176 was a bill that had been, compromised to a certain degree. A lot of people kind of forced the sponsor into changing some of the language in the bill.
I see.
And so it passed the last time it passed by basically a party line vote.
Yeah.
And but what that bill has now, the bill reads that it's subject to administration by the Fish and Wildlife Commission.
Uh-huh.
Whereas prior it was not. Prior, it was basically mandated by the legislature that they would have to reduce the the wolf population down to, I think it was 550, or in one reading it was like 450, which is the minimum accepted number before it goes into basically danger of being relisted again.
So we'll just have to wait to see how 176 turns out.
Yeah, we should know by the end of today, I believe.
Okay, well, I can report on it next week. And grizzly bears have, I want to switch species. Grizzly bears have been the target of hunters and ranchers and others. They're on the endangered species list. Do you think their status is now threatened by the Trump administration? Is that a concern?
Oh, I would say so, yes. I mean, that's probably a given, that their status is more likely threatened now than it was before.
Yeah. So there are some other bills in the legislature that deal with wildlife. SB 146 is the Private Property Protection Act, and you've been tuned into that one too, haven't you?
Yes. As far as I can tell, that bill has not had a committee vote yet,
yeah,
which is kind of surprising. A lot of times they'll have a vote on in committee the day after, or sometimes the same day as the hearing, but that one has not had a committee vote yet, so that's still viable.
And what would that bill do?
That bill would have basically, to me, my personal opinion is that it would give exponential amount of private property rights to landowners to the point where a landowner could do whatever he wanted to with his property. Even to the detriment of his neighbors, even to the detriment of the local community.
And how is wildlife?
And wildlife. They were definitely right.
How would that?
And so that's one reason that GWA is against that legislation. That to me, that was just going too far, and I understand the value of personal property and private protection and all that, but it's like anything in society. You can take something good to the nth degree, to the point where it can do more harm than good. No, there's not really any rights that are absolute. I'm not saying there aren't any, but there's very few. Even free speech is not absolute. We can't yell fire in a crowded theater. So this one falls in that category, to where, just because, and we have seen that several times in Gallatin County here, where someone wanted to put a, let's say, a gravel pit on the property, extracting groundwater for that and everything, and without even recognizing the potential harm that the pumping of water, what that does to the aquifer and neighboring wells. And so, you just, if you're going to have a society, you got to have some limitations. And this to me went above and beyond that.
So then there's House Bill 285 that would weaken the Montana Environmental Protection Act.
Yeah, that one, as far as I can tell, has not had a voting committee yet either. This is kind of an interesting bill. Basically, the Republicans were upset after the Held decision. I'm not sure if you know what that is, but that was the one where high school and young kids took the state to court over their violation of their environment from climate change.
Uh-huh.
And that they won in court, and the Montana Supreme Court upheld that. And so what sponsors of this bill are trying to do is weaken or put guardrails on NEPA, which is the Montana Environmental Protection Act, similar to NEPA on the national level. And Democrats, on the other hand, are trying to strengthen the statute by inclusion of climate change in the reviews and guidelines. So that one we have commented on. And then the last one here I think you're going to ask about is Senate Bill 209.
Yeah.
That had its hearing this morning, its first hearing. And much to my surprise and many others in the room, I think, is that the sponsor of that bill decided to table it.
Oh, yeah?
And which is a good thing.
That would have limited conservation easements.
Yeah, it would have eliminated conservation easements to 40 years.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, people that go into that program go into it with the understanding it's perpetual. You start putting limits on it, and then it kind of defeats the purpose of going into a conservation easement.
Yeah, right.
The whole point of it is that you get that landscape stays within the family forever, or until they sell it, and but you start putting limit on it, and then you know, then it's not as attractive,
right.
Which would undermine the whole program.
Hey, Clint, before we finish, I want you to talk about the Fix Our Forests Act. I've been getting emails from you. Tell us about that. It's federal legislation, right?
I'm sorry, it's what legislation?
Act. It's federal?
Oh, federal, yes. Yeah, that is, that was introduced in Congress. It was actually introduced in the last legislative session, and it passed the House, I believe, but it did not get picked up by the Senate. So now, after this, the last election here in November, it was introduced again in the House and passed. It passed with a lot of support from Democrats, and this is to me a horrible bill. It basically weakens the whole concept of timber or forest management, I should say. It reduces it puts new exclusions on the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, which would make it easier to thin forest on public land without scientific review. It impacts wildlife in that it would impact the Endangered Species Act and remove essential protections from species because of climate change. It also limits public and judicial review, making it harder for people to have a voice in that process. And on top of all that, we believe that this bill could also make wildfires worse by allowing thinning in natural areas that could be buffers, like mature and old growth forest. And so for all those reasons, GWA is adamantly opposed to this bill, and there's a national program fighting it, but for reasons I'm not quite sure why, there are some Democratic senators who are for this, who are most likely going to vote for it.
But it'll have to be reintroduced in this session of the House of Representatives, right?
Oh, yeah, it already has. I'm sorry, maybe I didn't make that clear.
Oh.
It already has, and it passed in the House in January.
Really?
And so, yeah, and so it's going to go over to the Senate next year, probably in the next few weeks or so. And they have not had any hearings on it yet, but, yeah, we're working, trying to get the, make sure that we can get senators lined up to vote against this bill. And because it's almost a sure thing that if the Senate passes this, President Trump is going to sign it into law, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, happens after that, unless there are massive litigations going on to, trying to fight it, but that puts us in a defensive position for sure.
We're almost out of time. Is GWA involved in any other litigation right now?
Yeah, the ones that the last time we talked, which I'm not sure when that was, well, litigation takes a long time. Those are still ongoing.
Ah, okay.
And we do have one new one, and that has to do with... It's not necessarily an organization, but several citizens within Montana are suing the Montana Fish and Wildlife Commission over their decision to basically allow an increase in black bear hunting.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and that decision was made by the commission on their own without any advance notice to the public. And so there, that in and of itself is illegal, that the Fish and Wildlife Commission have to publish and allow the public to have a voice in any decisions that are made that affects the, you know, the public trust.
Chris,
and they did not do that. So we are suing them over that.
Yeah, we've run out of time, Clint, but I appreciate talking with you and finding out what's going on up in Montana. So thanks very much.
You bet.
I guess
wish you were here, John.
He's president of Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. And this has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman. More information about the association and its activities can be found at its website, www.gallatinwildlife.org. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or to buzzsprout.com and stroll around the wilderness and wildlife. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.